I am David Crow. Thanks for tuning in to episode 87 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. You can email me at david.crow, that's crow with an E, at theinfectiousmyth.com. Join the discussion or like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth or follow us on Twitter at infectiousmyth. You can listen when we're broadcast at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time on prn.fm. Or a day or two later, you can download us using iTunes or other podcast programs. And remember, I really want to hear from you. If you send me a message letting me know how you stay in touch with the show and including your mailing address, I will send you a little thank you gift. If you'd like to sponsor this show as an individual or as an advertiser, please contact me. We appreciate all our listeners, but if you want this show to continue to grow and improve, consider paying a small amount for the information that you're gleaning, for the support that you get for some non-mainstream ideas, and the challenges that you get to others. So let's go right to our guest this week, and if there's some time afterwards, I'll get into a couple other issues. Leslie Carol Botha is the author of Understanding Your Mind, Mood, and Hormone Cycle, editor of the Holy Hormones Journal, and host of the radio show Holy Hormones Honey. Botha is currently a women's health consultant for the Focus for Health Foundation and communications director for the Liberty Beacon. She's studied women's hormone health for a long time. Two of her concerns are manipulation of the female hormone cycle, for example, the suppression of menstruation, and the HPV vaccines, both Gardasil and Cervarix. And we'll talk about both topics today. Her website is holyhormones.com, which I'll put in the show notes. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Thank you, David. I'm delighted to be here. I really appreciate your interest in my work and my concerns. I would also like to add that I am the co-author of Understanding Your Mind, Mood, and Hormone Cycle. I feel that this is an important book that every woman and her partner should have.
Well, and I wanted to say that, as people might have noticed, I'm a guy, so I'm going to need you to do a little bit of woman-splaining and to me and to the male half of the audience. And perhaps you can start by explaining, because what is the biological purpose of the female hormonal cycle?
Well, that's a loaded question.
Yeah, just the biology.
Other than to continue the human species.
Well, that's kind of
important. I think, you know, that's pretty important, but actually, let me talk about it in another aspect.
Okay.
You asked about the biological. I answered it right there. Without our reproductive system, there would be no...
But why a cycle? I mean, why can't women be fertile all the time?
Why a cycle? Now you're going somewhere. Because everything in this world cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And we are the only ones who are not. And guess who's sick and guess who's dying?
Because we're trying to control the cycle.
We're living a testosterone-driven life, man. And there's some mansplaining for you. But we really are. I mean, literally, we live minute after minute, hour after hour, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. We hardly let up. In fact, the pace of our life is really making us even more driven, and it is no wonder that when we retire, we keel over.
Right.
Because we are not living with the cycles of the universe, the dance of the universe, which is found in every life form in this planet. Well, look, we have night, we have day, we have winter, and boy, are they getting winter back on the East Coast. That we have winter, we have summer. These are cycles. Our world is built on ratios. Women's reproductive hormones, male reproductive hormones have to be in ratio with each other to function correctly. Every cell in our body cycles to the circadian rhythm.
We inhale, we exhale.
Mm-hmm. We inhale nutrients, we exhale the toxins. The endocrine system is the lightning rod in the body. From the pineal gland in the brain that brings in the external rhythms, the external energy, down to our root chakra and everything in between. In fact, the endocrine glands line up with the chakras. I'm not sure you're probably not aware of that one, David.
Probably there's probably a lot of things that I'm not aware of. So don't feel bad if you explain stuff to me. Yeah.
I'm teasing. I mean, they have a real sacred role.
You're right. Just to get back to the biology for a minute, and tell me if my understanding is that the lining of the uterus is shed during menstruation, and then it regrows, and a woman becomes fertile, and then the whole thing cycles again. I mean, that's basically what's going, which is why a woman is only fertile for a portion of the cycle, right?
And that is correct.
And so why do people want to control or stop this cycle? What are the reasons for that?
Well, you've got a lot of profit in it. But seriously, you know, on a certain note of concern, we have a population that is out of control, global population. That is a big issue, and is why the Bill Gates Foundation has taken a great interest in birth control, and I hope we can get to that in a little bit. There's another whole feminist philosophy that birth control is suppressing women. In fact, it does suppress the pill itself, and other synthetic hormones suppress the many parts of the brain. And we're even seeing brain atrophy due to this. These articles are just starting to come out, but it's all a part of the suppression of women. And there have been, let me pull up some notes here,
well,
see if I can get
I would
out.
I would have thought it was the opposite, because the pill allowed women to have the same sexual freedom that men had. It allowed them to control their reproduction. So how can you say that it's the opposite?
Because it's become the opposite. Women fought hard for birth control and the right to control their fertility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Margaret Sanger, you know, she was in the midst of it and the thick of it. And a lot of people, you know, call her, you know, a eugenicist. Who's not these days? I mean, we're only fooling ourselves.
Well, a lot of people back then.
And their eugenics was big on the agenda. It's a hidden agenda today. But yes, she was out to save women's lives. And yes, she was out to prevent people who were mentally ill from reproducing, because that does put a burden on society. It does put a burden on society. There were these things that she was doing, but, you know, there's a difference between using condoms and spermicide. There's a difference between using the birth control pill and having a choice about these matters, and having a choice about whether or not, and you and your partner want to talk about this, you want to get pregnant, and when should we get pregnant? When should we start having a family? What has happened now, David, is the very right to have birth control, which we fought so hard for, mm-hmm. to save women's lives, is now controlling our lives.
But, birth control is a multifaceted thing, and there's a lot of choices, right? There's, you pointed out, there's condoms, there's spermicides, there's IUDs. The birth control pill, is that still the biggest, the most popular form of birth control?
Well, yes and no. But it's being phased out. And what we have now is a term is called long-acting reversible contraceptives. And the push is to use these LARCs, is the acronym for that, okay? On girls as young as 11 and 12. I'll be safe, 12 and 13.
And is this because they're sexually active or for other reasons?
They don't care. In Seattle, Washington, Washington, the state of Washington passed legislation removing parental consent from parents about birth control. They put 1,300 girls on either implants, injections, or IUDs as low as age 12, I believe.
But
these girls were going off to school, were being implanted, injected, all right, as I mentioned, or inserted with an IUD, and then came home and said, Mommy, this is what happened to me today. This is frightening stuff because these girls' endocrine systems haven't even matured. And by the way, the birth control pill has been called the longest uncontrolled experiment in medical history. We have no idea of the outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when a large percentage of the population uses it to really know what things it causes when it's used over a long period of time. It's a lot easier for a drug that's used for some acute health crisis. You can see what the effects are. But, I mean, are you saying that 11-year-old girls are being given a form of birth control to regulate their cycles, or because they think children
to render them infertile, to sterilize them? It's nothing short of that. The whole thing about regulating cycles, let's get that clear. These synthetic hormone contraceptives do not regulate a cycle. They suppress it totally. Mm-hmm. Women do not ovulate. When they're thinking that they're menstruating, they're having a chemically induced bleed. That's not a natural cycle. Obviously, I get a little passionate about these topics.
Right. I understand. I mean, it does seem to me to be dangerous to suppress menstruation when humans, like all mammals, have evolved for millions of years to have this cycle, to basically stop it completely or to dramatically change it does seem dangerous. I mean, from your point of view, what forms of birth control don't have the hormonal effects of the pill or injections that are hormonal injections?
Men keeping their pants zipped up. Well, let's factor that in. I couldn't resist that because you guys are 50% of the problem.
Well,
if not more. I mean, women have carried the burden of birth control because our bodies are the ones that get pregnant all along. And what that has done, and actually there are studies coming out about this, is what that has done is just really distanced men and women from each other and having a lack of intimacy. These people, young women coming up under us, David, and their partners have a whole new ball game with all of these fertility apps on the market where they can look at a woman's fertility cycle, know when it's safe or not to safe, or when it's safe or not to be safe to be
in other words, when she's
prevent.
Right. So you're talking about the Rhythm method.
No, there are fertility apps on the market that look at more than just rhythm.
Right.
And there's, I couldn't even name, there's so many complex, and they're not even complex, but there's so many different ones out there, user-friendly, but it does go beyond what the Catholic Church deemed as rhythm, the rhythm method. Then on the other hand, and we have to look at the reality of this too, when we go, well, maybe I made a mistake. We now have a plan B. We have the morning after pill that's, at least here in this country, you can get over the counter, so women are not forced with an unwanted pregnancy and they are not forced with having an abortion. The menstrual cycle is a vital sign of a woman's health. And if it's a vital sign of her health, David, you better believe it's a vital sign of your health.
Right. Okay, so what you're saying,
that woman.
Right. So what you're saying is that you believe that you shouldn't interfere with the woman's natural cycle, and that a couple should plan their sexual activity around that. And there's sexual activity that it can occur without penetration, so it doesn't mean that you don't have to touch each other for a week or however long the fertility lasts. That's basically what you're saying.
There are lots of ways to be intimate with your partner without having to have intercourse, yes.
Right.
I think that we are just beginning to understand the dangers of synthetic hormones. We've seen a dramatic increase in breast cancer rates, prostate cancer rates for men. Why? Because estrogen is in our water. Estrogen is in our environment. Estrogen is in our food. Estrogen mimickers and glyphosate, which is in Monsanto's Roundup, is an estrogen mimicker. Plastic, which we all drink water out of plastic bottles, and many of us microwave in plastic, unbeknownst that there is a chemical firestorm going off in their microwave that they can't smell, see, or feel, but there is. And it's been said that, like, when lead was the downfall of Rome, well, that BPA is going to be the downfall of the United States of America and its use of plastic. These are dangerous chemicals that act as estrogen mimickers on both women and men. We have men now with man boobs. We have children being born who are confused about their gender. They're being born, and we have girls and boys' bodies and boys and girls' bodies. And Frontline, I believe, is which is a major media channel here in the United States, did an 180 minute segment on it last June.
On,
I was just shocked on the rise of transgender children being born and gender confusion going on. And here, and to make matters worse, they're using experimental drugs to shut down, to prevent these kids from going into puberty until they make a decision on whether they want to be a boy or a girl. These are really serious issues.
Yeah, I've actually addressed some of the transgender issues with Alice Drager, who I interviewed earlier. And she was actually talking about how this really poorly tested, these really poorly tested interventions have been pushed simultaneously as experimental and simultaneously as non-experimental. Like, the parents are not told that this is experimental, but the government is asked for funding for experiments. So it's incredibly hypocritical of what's going on. I would say that with breast cancer and prostate cancer, a large part of the problem is overdiagnosis. Both the PSA test and mammography have resulted in that. It's not all a real increase. A lot of it is actually an artificial increase because of overdiagnosis. But I'm not saying that that hormones, artificial hormones don't have a negative effect on biology.
Oh, well, yeah, we are just beginning to see all of that. And I understand where you're coming from with the misdiagnosis of breast cancer. I mean, basically, we all have tumors in our body. Tumors come and go. We just don't understand the nature of that yet. So, I mean, we trot off to the doctor. They said, oh, you got a tumor. We need to take it out. And we're too frightened to even to see if it will disappear on its own, even using some natural therapies, which plenty of times that it does. And if we clean up our diet and our lifestyle, we can go on with life instead of having our breasts lobbed off.
I interviewed Peter Gottschy, who's an expert on the problems with mammography. And it's one of the points that he made that really surprised me was that there's evidence, quite good evidence, that there's a significant number of small breast tumors that do regress. And the problem is, of course, that if you do a mammogram and you find a small lump, that you're not going to wait a year to see if it regresses or grows. You're just going to take it out. That's the problem that he's seeing. But if it's not dealt with, in many cases they will disappear or they just won't grow.
They need estrogen to grow.
Right. My mother, when she was about 60, had her first mammogram and they found a lump and they did surgery, but she didn't talk to me first. But I was thinking, that lump might have been there since she was 20 or 30, and it might have basically not grown, because that kind of stuff does happen, which people aren't aware of.
Oh, and that's why you use natural progesterone and put that on your breast. Absolutely. Because estrogen certainly causes these tumors to grow. Another thing that women and men are not aware of, and this really frightens me, and it keeps me doing my radio show and writing and blogging and everything else that I do, David, is that immunity, and immunity is the big word these days, right? Immunity mm-hmm. drops right before a woman gets her period. It drops during the premenstrual phase, a phase that I'm not really keen on using because then the next word after that is syndrome. So I use a term called paramenstruum, which is a combination of the premenstrual and the menstrual phase, the paramenstruum. During that time, immunity is at its lowest. Mm-hmm. And it is not recognized by the medical industry. It is not recognized by the psychiatric industry. It is not recognized by the pharmaceutical industry. And women, because we don't understand what's going on with our bodies, we'll trot off to the doctor's office, we'll go under a surgeon's knife, we'll have dental surgery, go on new medications during the paramenstruum when her immunity is at her lowest.
And all they need to do is wait a few days, is what you're saying.
Thank you. Really? When we feel better. I mean, we're not even feeling good and we have vaccines.
Well,
we have
surgeries. I have a friend who's a mainstream trained doctor, but his viewpoints are not mainstream. And he said, if you get the flu and come to me and for help, you'll be better again in 5 days. And if you don't go to the doctor, you'll be better in 4 days.
Well, I like that as well. We need to take our health back into our own hands. I mean, that's why you're doing the show. That's why I'm here today. And women need to understand and accept their cycles. I mean, and start living with them instead of living against them and pretending that everything is okay when inside they're falling off the mount. They're doing a free fall off Mount Everest. That's how bad hormone imbalance is. But a point I did want to bring up is that this is really a huge social political issue or social issue that we're not even aware of. I worked with at-risk girls ages 13 to 17. They'd already been in and out of jail. And by the time, I'd been working with them for a couple of years, developed a full curriculum that covered other things other than menstrual cycle, but we certainly focused a lot on that and birth control and STDs. I threw in women's history and values and choices. And I taught these girls how to chart their cycle in terms of how they felt physically, mentally, and emotionally. But the sad, I won't go into all of that, but the sad, very sad thing was, is that the data I collected at the end of the class, my time with these girls, and I was teaching in four different girls' schools and four different boys' schools, is that these girls, time and again, ended up in jail and started their periods. What does that mean? Well, let's see. If immunity is at its lowest, right before a woman is getting her period, entering the premenstrual phase, what, she's irritable, she's edgy, she doesn't know what's going on with her body, her self-esteem is shot, she's gaining some water weight, she's probably got some acne going on. These are for younger girls, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so then she gets into a hormonal rage and starts screaming at mom and dad or screaming back at her, and she runs away from the house. What she doesn't know either is that drug and alcohol will affect a woman 10 times harder during the paramenstruum than any other time of the cycle. And so where she's out partying over here after menstruation, and she has the same amount of drinks and drugs over here, guess who gets date raped?
Hmm. So you're saying that if somebody takes drugs and alcohol that they've been used to before and they take it just before menstruation, it will have a much bigger effect?
Oh, yeah. I did this in the detention center in our county jail. 5 out of 5 women, all right, were there. And I'm doing my class years ago when I was just a newbie. And I said, and these are all blue-collar women hanging out in the blue-collar bars at the time. And I said, alcohol here, very different from alcohol over here. 5 out of 5 adult women said to me, well, no wonder we end up in jail and get our periods every month. We're being thrown in jail for disorderly conduct and disruptive behavior.
And you think that as a society, we've basically tried to quote liberate ourselves from the seasons by building houses, from light and dark by putting lights in our houses. We've tried to liberate ourselves from the cycle, but you're saying that if you understand your own cycle, you're better able to deal with the consequences of that cycle. Perhaps you have less tolerance of alcohol or drugs at certain times of the month, et cetera. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying that. And of course, the pill just suppresses that, and with people and synthetic hormones, so which our body, which is trying to cycle, is being suppressed, which puts a lot of a health burden on women. What people don't realize is that these synthetic hormones deplete the body of vital nutrients. In fact, David, synthetic hormones in the pill can cause cervical cancer.
And we're going to talk about the vaccine for cervical cancer in a bit, I hope.
Well, yeah, we're just getting going here.
What are some of the side effects of the pill, either annoying side effects or the more serious side effects that you believe are correlated with the use of the pill?
Oh, I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of posts some of them, on my blog. So let's go from irritability, depression, a woman not knowing who she is, weight gain. Those are probably the top ones. If they're left unchecked, then it keeps spiraling down and spiraling down, and the problems become more severe. Infertility is another one. Heavy bleeding, cramping is another big one. Those are the physical symptoms. Relationship problems is huge. And it was study came out not too long ago, actually, and of course I blogged about it, but women don't know who they are in the pill, and coming off the pill, they're going, well, who am I? And they're looking at their partner going, why the hell did I pick him? That there is a difference in their brain coming off the pill, that it actually makes women wonder why they attracted the man that they attracted currently in their life.
Mm. Interesting.
That's pretty big.
I know that that when I was first married to my ex, she started on the pill and didn't last, I think, more than a month or two before she said, I can't do this, and came off and never used it again because of mood issues and I think water retention, other things like that, which really surprised me because at that point I thought the pill was a miracle. And it was, of course, easy for me. I didn't have to do anything.
Well, and it's a miracle, and it was being prescribed by men who keep telling us it's all in our head. Well, it turns out it is all in our head because part of our brain is being suppressed. But when you're using a synthetic hormone that is suppressing hormone production, which begins in the brain, it's going to have a trickle-down effect through the rest of the body. And male doctors didn't get it.
I think one of the conundrums of our society is that we, in one sense, we value information. You know, people talk about the information age, et cetera, et cetera. But going on the pill is basically eliminating the desire or need to have information about your body cycles, because there aren't any real cycles anymore. Whereas what you were promoting is to plan around your fertility, which implies that you actually know about your cycles, that you actually embrace your cycles, and you and your partner know what part of the cycle that you're in, and use that to plan what type of sexual activity you'll have, or to maybe explain why you're feeling one way or another. So you're actually asking for more information, whereas our society is trying to delete the need for information. Don't worry about your biological cycles. Take this pill every day and you won't have to worry about it anymore.
Well, and that's very true, and that's a good point. And the less women know, the more profits are being made off our bodies. And that's been going on for many, many a year, and it is still going on. I could tell you, you know, I could just go on and on for hours about it, but I'm not. But that's basically
we don't have hours. We only have minutes.
I know that, and we're running out. But I'm going to get into it. I mean, no, I want. So I'm going to not go down that path. However. You know, we're taught reproductive education in school, which is about sex, and it's about birth control, and it's about STDs, which is why it's so political. And it comes up every year about who should be controlling women's bodies, and what either the Democrats or the Republicans or the Pope. He's getting in on the whole deal right now. Well, he's always been because of the pill, but even more so right now. And we're not being taught about what really drives women and men, but really drives women. And that's the endocrine system.
Okay, so I'm glad you brought up politics, because I want to separate. I mean, American politics is getting more and more segregated into the right end and the left end. So I want you to talk about hormone cycles in both the left end and the right end. So on the left end, we've got people who are in favor of equal rights to sexuality, access to sex education. They're pro-choice. What are their problems with the woman's cycle, in your opinion?
Well, I would think that, and I am pro-choice, and I am all those things, and I'm a feminist, but I think our eyes are opening up. I mean, I was in on the whole thing about birth control and fighting for women's rights and supporting women's rights for choice, and I still do today, but I just think that birth control has turned out to be dangerous because, remember, in any medical experiment, we are the long-term results of that experiment. And the birth control pill now is like 3, 4, 5 generations in use. And that estrogen has been found in the umbilical cord of infants. And it is causing hormone imbalance even as our children, great-grandchildren, grandchildren are being born.
But politically, people on the left end of the spectrum are unlikely to want to go after the pill because that's progressive, right? That's an advance. I mean, is that a fair statement that if you're a Hillary Clinton liberal and somebody criticizes the pill, you're probably going to be antagonistic?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It is happening. It's causing a rift amongst feminists. But as science will bear us out with vaccines, science will also bear us out on the dangers of synthetic hormones.
Eventually, maybe.
Eventually. Well, we can only do what we can do.
So on the conservative...
Let's go to the conservative
end of the spectrum. So we've got pro-abstinence education, anti-abortion, sexually conservative, like sex only within a marriage, highly religious. You know what I'm talking about, the right end of the spectrum in America, the sort of the religious right. So
let me get out my binoculars so I can see them.
Yeah. So what are their problems when it comes to dealing with women's hormone cycles? Like they're not in favor of birth control, right? Because teenagers shouldn't be having sex, right? So
yeah, right. You shouldn't be having sex until you're married.
Right.
You know, and I really don't really want to get into that agenda. But I mean, talking about abstinence, I mean, it doesn't happen unless somebody zips up their pants. Well, we already talked about that. That's a big part of the problem. Though I have to say, we got some pretty scary girls out there growing up who are flaunting their bodies and showing their boobs.
Well,
and,
it's natural, right? I mean,
and
it's,
their
it's,
legs. Yeah, it's natural,
like the desire for sex is a natural part of life, right?
Absolutely, right. And we've, you know, moralized it and... you know, almost made it a religion not to have sex. That's been going on for as long as our country's been around anyway.
Which is hypocritical because the people
the curriculum that I developed for these girls at these at-risk homes, I called it abstinence through empowerment. You cannot teach a girl not to have sex or to abstain from sex or just to say no to sex. It doesn't work that way. You have to empower her as to why. We have to teach these girls that they have more value than what lies between their legs, because that's the message that they're getting from the media and their friends and the boys they're hanging out with.
So are you saying they should abstain or they should just choose who and when to have sex?
Well, the more we're getting to know about virus and bacteria... the more we're getting to know about toxins that we're all sharing when we kiss somebody, and viruses and bacteria that have mutated, it puts another whole spin on abstinence. In fact, I may be all for abstinence before I'm done here.
Well,
I just interviewed someone, and I wish she said something about 80,000 viruses, bacteria are passed through in a kiss.
Well, I totally don't
you're gonna
buy that.
Too.
Well, first of all, I have a lot of problems with the whole virus thing. I believe that most viruses probably don't exist except in the fevered imagination of a CDC scientist or NIH scientist, and I think our body can handle most bacteria. I really don't buy this whole thing that sex is a medical danger. I mean, it seems to me that sex is a very powerful thing that strengthens relationships. But of course, it's like anything else. If it's overused, and you know, whether you're a man or a woman and have sex with anybody, or you have sex to make yourself feel more worthwhile or something like that, then that's a really bad thing. But I see abstinence as not a very practical alternative, because the natural sex drive is so strong that it's just not going to work.
And yes, and I agree with you and all of that, but we're going to run out of time here. And what I want to also talk about are STDs. These synthetic hormones do not prevent STDs.
Right.
Sexually transmitted diseases, STIs, sexually transmitted infections, whatever you want to call it. You're putting these girls who are emotionally immature on these LARCs, all right, synthetic hormone contraceptives. They're too young to remember to take the pills, so that's why they're making this other push and move, and they think they're safe. Well, guess what, David? Pregnancy doesn't kill anymore. STDs kill. And that's why you have all of a sudden Merck and Company, who is the manufacturer of Implanon, which is an implant being injected into these girls' arms, not telling them about STDs. And then on the other side of the fence, they're coming up with their HPV vaccine, Gardasil, which is killing and maiming girls, disabling girls. Hundreds of thousands of girls are not even accountable because nobody relates their side effects back to a vaccine, because we're so vaccine religious in this country. And so they're setting girls up to get STDs over here with their birth control methods, and then they're ready to pump them full of aluminum and other toxins over here. I have a hard time with that. I think it's highly immoral.
Do you believe that HPV causes most cervical cancer?
No. In fact, we didn't ever even heard of HPV until Merck came along with their Gardasil vaccine. Do you know what HPV stands for?
Human papilloma virus.
Help pay for Vioxx.
Okay.
And Merck was given an award by the pharmaceutical industry when Gardasil first came out on the market. And he was given they were given an award for creating a market out of thin air. They were given an award for a jingle that came out that was on every television commercial all around the country, and had girls dancing all around the room saying, I want to be one less girl to get cervical cancer. And you know what happened to those girls? I know a living room full of them, actually, three or four of them in Iowa, and they all became disabled because of Gardasil.
And the Nobel Prize was given to a guy named Zurhausen in 2008 for the discovery of human papillomavirus. And in the Nobel Prize citation, it says, it will be decades before we know whether the vaccines will actually reduce the risk of cervical cancer, because they weren't proven on that basis. They were proven on the basis that they reduced the precancerous cells in the body. But that there's not a direct correlation between those precancerous cells and cancer. Most people with them don't get cancer. So there's no proof that HPV vaccine will actually reduce the risk of cancer. And yet that's like accepted by, especially on the progressive left end of things, that HPV, you're irresponsible if you don't allow your daughter to get HPV vaccine.
Well, the vaccine has DNA fragments in it. It's part of the manufacturing process. And now SaneVax has just come out with even more research that the aluminum in the vaccine is binding onto these HPV DNA fragments, which have been found. And nobody knows what happens when DNA fragments enter a cell with normal DNA.
And aluminum.
And nobody knows, and aluminum. And nobody knows how to get rid of them. So these are all really, really pretty serious issues. And a word to the wise, when a new drug comes on the market, wait 5 years. Because a lot of them are taken off the market. This one has been on longer. Merck and Bill Gates and the WHO, World Health Organization, are all being implicated right now. They've been implicated in collusion in India, taken to the Supreme Court. There are people fighting the Gardasil HPV vaccine all around the country. In fact, the Autism One Conference, which is held annually in Chicago at the end of May, the weekend before Memorial Day weekend, or the weekend of Memorial Day weekend, I believe, is actually SaneVax is bringing in a panel of HPV professionals who are doctors, researchers, who are coming to discuss the dangers and their concerns about, we're having a symposium, their concerns about the HPV vaccine.
I mean,
so it should be very interesting.
There doesn't appear to be any question that the HPV vaccine is associated with a higher risk of adverse effects than other vaccines.
46% more than all the other in the VAERS database.
Right. VAERS is the U.S.
tracking system here.
Right. The vaccine adverse event database that's run by the U.S. government, right? So it's, I mean, it's kind of bizarre to me that most people in America, especially people with power, politicians, businessmen, people like that, support vaccines as a no-brainer. They work, they're safe, and yet we have this huge database and billions of dollars in compensation that are being paid out for adverse effects from vaccines. Plus, with HPV, we have a vaccine that has never been proven to actually do what it's supposed to do, which is to reduce the risk of cancer.
Yeah, right. Well, and the deal is, and it pushes on to do more vaccines versus more medicine, only because, 1986, I believe, was the start of the Vaccine Compensation Injury Program. And at the same time, pharmaceutical companies lost their liability for vaccine damage.
Well, no, they gained immunity from liability.
They gained immunity. There's that word again. Right. They gained immunity.
Mm-hmm. And they don't have a cycle.
So that's why
their cycle started.
Just like there's like 300 more coming down the pike because nobody can get sued. I mean,
and
hey,
Paul,
I'd love to be in a game like that.
Right. Paul Offit says that people can take up to 10,000 vaccines. So we've still got a long ways to go before we're fully vaccinated.
Right. Yeah, right. Well, step up to the plate on that one. What's even more frightening, David, is this movement now to be seeing doctors on your computers or on your phones checking in with you, visiting nurses coming in and checking on welfare parents and their kids. And, you know, it's like, oh, this is so wonderful. And to me, it's like, oh, my God, all they want to do is get these kids vaccinated. But I do have something else to mention. I wouldn't call myself an extremist, though other people would. But I also want to mention, in terms of Bill Gates and the push for the vaccines, there's another vaccine out there which has been under our nose for a long time. It's a birth control vaccine. It's called Depo-Provera, and it's being used widely around the world in developing world countries. Majority world countries actually is what we should be calling them because they really dominate the world, I think, but on unsuspecting women. And again, this is a very dangerous injection that is being given to even young girls when it was designed for women later on in their years and after all other birth control methods were ruled out as being safe. And so that we need to be concerned about, and we don't have time to talk about the science behind that and why those concerns are there. But one more thing I want to go along with. I mean, this is like more than a what do you call it, a science fiction novel. I mean, it sounds so absurd, but Bill Gates is getting involved in another way in the birth control movement, and this vaccine, certainly Depo vaccine, is sterilizing women. There's no doubt about that. All sorts of problems.
So the purpose of Depo-Provera is like you get a shot, and how long is it supposed to last?
It's supposed to last up to 3 months.
And you're saying that some women, after they stop, can't get pregnant? Is that what you mean by sterilized?
Yes. And some women don't stop. They stay on it. In fact, in India, I think I read that they're giving disposable Depo-Provera injections to women so they can take them home and give the shots to themselves instead of walking 90 miles to the clinic, which is what is happening for these women who are living in the backcountry. But how do you remember when you got your shot?
I'm sure there's a lot of
Yeah, so let me get back to this, and because we're going to have to wrap it up here pretty quick, and I'm sure you're going to have a comment about this one. So Bill Gates has vowed to have a microchip birth control on the market. Well, let's see, 3 years ago. It's probably about 2 years. In 2 years, that will be implanted in all women's arms. That will be good for 16 years. That will drip synthetic hormones into our bloodstreams, and can be controlled by a remote control. Now, David, do you control the remote control in your family?
Well, I do have to say that it's highly unlikely that in these. I understand there are chips that can go in people's arms, but they can only be manipulated from a few inches away at most.
Well, but that is really, if that is where we're heading, then women's fertility is going to be controlled remotely. A doctor, a man, is going to decide, in most cases a man, of course there's women, also her partner, you know, they're going to have the ultimate say on whether she can be switched on or switched off.
So basically that's the selling point, is that if you put a computer chip in the arm controlling the release of hormones, that if you decide you want to get pregnant, you just go off. And if you don't, you turn on.
Right.
And I think some people are going to see this as a vicious conspiracy, but I think it's just technology gone mad, because again, it's not recognizing what you're saying about the importance of the female cycle. It's basically saying we're just going to control it for the rest of your life.
Exactly. Through technology.
And even if it's not handled remotely, even if you and your partner have the remote control under your control, it still means that your body is under chemical control for forever, basically.
16 years. No long-term experiments or no long-term studies on this one either.
Yeah.
And it could happen to you guys too. So I mean, you could be next up to the plate. And here's
in
the
Canada.
Deal.
You're talking about me being in Canada. We always get America's leftovers. If we're lucky, then the Americans discover that it's a disaster before we get it. Like the housing crisis, we missed that because we weren't quite there in time. But in other cases, we're just right behind America and get all the bad stuff that you do about 2 years later, and all the good stuff.
Well, I'll get my red flag out and I'll start waving it so you folks up north of the border there can start seeing us down here. We're waving the red flag. Just say, don't even think about it.
Yes.
Let's end on a note.
Yeah.
Because male endocrine systems are just as important as female endocrine systems.
Yeah, do I have a cycle?
Of course you do. Everybody cycles. You're just not aware.
I'm totally not aware of it. Yes.
Yeah. And it, we start paying. I mean, we have a biomarker. Da-da. We bleed. There's
right,
a biomarker.
Right.
We get bitchy. We bleed. But there is such a thing as male irritability that has been tied to cycle. We just meant, because we're all taught that, you know, cycles, you know, not important, relevant. Mm-hmm. We live on the testosterone driven life, is that we don't pay attention. And how I got into this is by paying attention. I was working at a family planning clinic and had women's charts in hands and saying, oh my God, did you know you were here on day 28 last month with the same migraine, with the same complaints? And that's when the things started skewing in my head. Like,
so do you believe
really?
That men have a monthly cycle?
I know men have a monthly cycle. We all cycle. We all cycle with the greatest cycler in the universe, and that's the moon. In our universe, anyway. That is the moon. The moon governs cycles on this planet.
Are women's cycles tied to the moon? Like, have
all
people
cycles
looked at that?
Are tied to the moon cycles, yes. And yes, I could talk so much about this. We may not cycle, we may not menstruate with the new moon every single month, because the moon moves through its phases and times in the calendar as we do. But I will tell you what, before 1542, when the Romans developed the Gregorian calendar, which was developed for work productivity and taxes, which we all live with,
right.
There is only one country on the world that I believe still has a lunar calendar. The whole world before 1542 lived with the lunar calendar, where you start each month with the new moon.
Right.
There were 13 cycles, which is a very sacred symbol and a very sacred number. There were 13 cycles in a lunar year.
Right.
What the Romans did is put us on artificial time.
A 12-month cycle, which is
artificial time. That's
slightly
whacked
off.
Out.
Right.
All of our endocrine systems.
Right, right.
Over time. So just thought I had to throw that one tidbit.
Well, to
women in your audience, I want to leave on a positive. It's kind of a startling quote from one of my great mentors, the feminist Eve Ensler. She is the author of The Vagina Monologue. She started 1 Billion Rising, which will take place on February 16th. It is a dance, a flash mob dance to end violence against women, and it's done around the world. She wrote in her book about her story with ovarian cancer, and her book is called In the Body of the World. And I got the book from the library, and this quote just bowled me over. She summed up everything that women have been going through for years. So here it is, David.
Go ahead.
This hysteria is a word used to make women feel insane for knowing what they know.
Thank you.
And that's where I'll end it with that.
Yes. Thank you. That's thought provoking.
Yeah,
and I was actually just discussing, well, long story, just discussing the role of women in the Renaissance today, and the expert on the issue said that men back then saw women as defective men.
Oh, yes, that is very true, and they've been trying to affix us ever since.
Yes.
Hysteria, hysterectomy, take it out. And that process is going on. And I would mention to you, in the Vatican, there's a conference coming up with all the fathers of gynecology. And they're actually wanting to bleach women's and reshape women's body parts.
Labia.
Thank you. I'm glad you
said it. Yeah, I've
women
heard
and
about
bleach,
that.
Bleach and women's labia. There's a conference on it at the Vatican.
Oh, really? Oh, that's really
sad. I mean, this
sad.
Is where we're going. And this is why it's so important for women and men to wake up, because women are becoming commodities. We are commodities.
Our bodies are actually really beautiful things. And it's like a lot of things in nature. They're not perfect. And the imperfections are part of the beauty. And we see these photoshopped women in magazines and photoshopped men, and we think that's how I should look, but that's total artificiality.
Yes.
Anyway, I've taken enough of your time.
No,
and
I want to repeat that quote one more time because someone didn't get it out there. Hysteria is a word used to make women feel insane for knowing what they know. Eve Ensler. Thank you, David. I really appreciate doing this radio show. I'd love to be a guest again and talk more in depth on some of these issues. And you've been a most gracious and educated host.
Well, thank you, Leslie. Thank you for joining me today. And thank you to my audience for listening to yet another episode of The Infectious Myth. Goodbye. Now we have a little bit of time left over after that great interview, so let's talk about the Zika virus. I mean, everybody else is talking about it, so why not us? What most people are not doing is going back to first principles, well, first publications. When was this virus discovered? In 1947, in the Zika forest in Uganda, so now you know where the name Zika virus came from, some scientists put monkeys in cages in the forest. One of them developed a fever, a monkey, not a scientist, and from it they got the virus, supposedly. And how ill was that monkey? Well, let me quote the scientists from their paper in the early 1950s. It was kept under observation for 30 days, but showed no abnormality other than the slight pyrexia, or fever, recorded in Figure 1. This reminds me of the West Nile virus that was also ironic quotes, isolated in Uganda about 10 years earlier, from a woman who denied being ill. Yet, when her blood was injected into the brains of mice, they died. A remarkably elegant proof. Irony alert. But in 1947, they were so much more sophisticated than in 1937. What did they do to prove it was a virus? Again, let me quote. A sample of blood was taken from rhesus number 766 on the 20th of April, the third day of fever. The serum was, well, don't stop. What was the serum? The serum was injected intracerebrally. I can't pronounce it, but what it means is it was injected directly into the brain and intraperitoneally under the skin into groups of mice and into another monkey, rhesus 771. So, of course, if the mice die, then they will claim that they have a deadly virus. So what did happen to the mice? Well, another quote. The mice who were inoculated intraperitoneally under the skin with the serum showed no abnormality during an observation period of 30 days. Now, that's pretty surprising because the virus was given free rein of their blood system and did nothing. Viruses are unlikely to get passage directly into your brain under any normal circumstance. But what about the mice who were injected directly into the brain? Again, a quote. All of those inoculated intracerebrally showed signs of sickness on the 10th day after inoculation. Signs of sickness is not very specific. So the mice didn't feel well after the serum from a monkey was injected directly into their brain. That really surprises me. And if you think that's a proof that a virus was transmitted, I hope that you will volunteer to have monkey serum injected into your brain. No, I don't hope that. Anyway, what was the proof of a virus? A filterable, transmissible agent was isolated from the brains of these sick mice, say the scientists. Filterable, all that means is that when the material from the brains of these mice, often ground up whole, is filtered, with a filter with pores smaller than any known bacteria, if the material can still cause illness, then it is believed to be proof that the material contains a virus. And what about the monkey? I left out that part. The rhesus monkey, number 771, which was inoculated with the serum, showed no elevation of temperature above its normal range and no other abnormalities during an observation period of 23 days. Be afraid. Be very afraid. And what about the birth defects? Well, I haven't been able to find any scientific papers on the Zika virus birth defects, but the European Centers for Disease Control recently wrote in November of last year, on the 17th of November, the Ministry of Health of Brazil reported the confirmation by reverse transcriptase PCR, which is a technology that looks for RNA, which is what this virus is believed to have, of the presence of Zika virus RNA in amniotic fluid samples collected from two pregnant women with fetal microcephaly from the state of Paraíba. Both women presented compatible symptoms of Zika virus infection during their pregnancy. On 17th, the virus, which if you're paying attention is the same day, the Pan American Health Organization and the World Health Organization issued an epidemiological alert regarding the increase of microcephaly in the northeast of Brazil and requested WHO member states to remain alert to the occurrence of similar events in their territories and to notify its occurrence through the channels established under the international health regulations. So that's when the panic started, on the 17th of November last year. And what about possible exposure to pesticides at home or at work or spray that comes from farmer fields? Despite the careless use of pesticides in many countries around the world and the known health risks of those, including risks to the fetus, there was not a word about potential environmental effects. Thank you for joining me on The Infectious Myth, episode number 87. Access our archive of episodes at infectiousmyth.podbean.com. If you got a comment, question, or suggestion for a future guest, please email me at david.crow, crow with an E, at theinfectiousmyth.com. Like us on facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth or follow us on Twitter @infectiousmyth. Until next week, goodbye.